Ama genetimi lanlısı ya, dinaz dinaz salak ya. Seksi sumanı çarpı dinaz tersman sivi gördüğünüm ha. Sivi çeytan yamanı bistan, stafitim dinaz bu tülay. Sayem kadamayam ve dati sabından fikir. Pansa kapı dülbes çak ve pesen dübek ve sapı titram habine yobes medinim Allah. So Lord Ramachandra had, with the help of his devotees, the monkey warriors, had rescued Sita Devi from the hands of the cruel Rakshasa Ravan. Then, after he was back in Ayodhya, his capital city, he was crowned the king, and he was ruling according to the Vanashrama system. And everything was so wonderful. The Brahmins, after he performed sacrifices and he gave everything to the Brahmins in charity, and they were pleased, so pleased, they gave everything back to him and they offered him wonderful prayers. And then, Sukadeva Goswami continued, this is text 8, chapter 11, canto 9. Once, while Lord Ramachandra was walking at night incognito. What does incognito mean?
In disguise.
Why would he do that? Why would the king sometimes walk around in disguise?
See what citizens are up to?
Yes. Well, not only what they're up to, but what are they thinking? Because when the king's walking around, then everyone's on their best behavior and everyone says jai jai, all glories to the king, but the king doesn't know what they're really thinking when he's not around and what's going on. So he wanted to find out, were the citizens happy actually, were they miserable, what's really going on, why was he in that mood? Because he was always very concerned. He had to govern properly. He thought of the citizens as if they were his children. So therefore he had to take care of them very, very nicely. So this was part of what a king would do. He would go around in disguise, incognito, to find out what the citizens were actually thinking. So once, while Lord Ramachandra was walking at night, incognito, hiding himself by a disguise to find out the people's opinion of himself, he heard a man speaking unfavorably about his wife, Sita Devi. Speaking to his own unchaste wife, the man said, "You go to another man's house and therefore you are unchaste and polluted. I shall not maintain you anymore. A henpecked husband like Lord Ram may accept a wife like Sita who went to another man's house. But I am not henpecked like him, and therefore I shall not accept you again." So Sita Devi was kidnapped by Ravana, and she stayed not exactly in the house of Ravana, but in a grove, an Ashok grove nearby, because the Veda culture was very, very strict. But yet she was staying, in one sense, under Ravana's care. Of course she was kidnapped, there was no fault, she was completely chaste, perfectly chaste, only thinking about Ram, Ram, Ram. So this was an unjust, unfair criticism, yet this man made it. "I will not accept you back. You've stayed with another man." He's speaking to his own unchaste wife. "You get out. I'm not like Ram, henpecked under the control of his wife." So when Ram heard this, he did something quite amazing. But Sukadeva Goswami said, "Men with a poor fund of knowledge and a heinous character speak nonsensically." So it was an unfair criticism, nonsensical criticism, fault finding. But fearing such rascals, Lord Ramachandra abandoned his wife, Sita Devi, although she was pregnant. Thus Sita Devi went to the ashram of Valmiki Muni. So he, based on this, he said, I can't, the king has to be above criticism. So if people are criticizing like this, then I will have to let Sita Devi go. Quite amazing. And it was a nonsensical person too. A low-class person with a truly unchaste wife. But yet, this is how the pastime continued. So he went to all that trouble. Ram went to all that trouble. He burnt down Lanka just to rescue Sita Devi. But then upon bringing her back, one man criticized. Oh, Ramachandra has accepted his wife Sita Devi back after she had lived in the home of another. And Ramachandra, being the ideal king, he said he adjusted his situation to avoid that criticism. So incredible. So when the time came, Sita Devi, who was pregnant, went to the ashram of Valmiki Muni. When the time came, the pregnant mother Sita Devi gave birth to twin sons, later celebrated as Lava and Kusha. The ritualistic ceremonies for their birth were performed by Valmiki Muni. Omaraj Prickett. Lord Lakshman had two sons named Angada and Chitraketu, and Lord Bharat also had two sons named Taksha and Pushkal. Shatrughna had two sons named Subahu and Shutasen. When Lord Bharat went to conquer all directions, he had to kill many millions of Gandharvas who were generally pretenders. Taking all their wealth, he offered it to Lord Ramachandra. Shatrughna also killed a Rakshasa named Lavan, who was the son of Madhu Rakshasa. Thus, he established in the great forest known as Madhuvan the town known as Mathura. So Mathura was originally established in the forest known as Madhuvan after Shatrughna had killed the demon named Lavana. There was Ravana and Lavana. So this Lavan was killed by Shatrughna, the brother of Ramachandra, and the town of Mathura was begun by him. Mathura is a nice place. You have seen Mathura? Yeah? Do you know who was born in Mathura? Do you know who was born in Mathura? I think you're right. But do you know who killed King Kamsa?
Krishna.
Yes. And you know where Krishna was born?
In Tavid.
Yes. Oh, Mathura.
He was right.
Yes. Yes. Or maybe I'm a Mathura Brahmin.
Yes, must be. He knows more.
You know much more. Very good. Who told you all these things? From where? From
Krishna's
tapes. Oh, the tapes or some, tapes?
Books.
Books. Yeah, nice. Do you like King Kamsa?
No.
Good. So Shatrughna established Mathura. Being forsaken by her husband, Sita Devi entrusted her two sons to the care of Valmiki Muni. Then, meditating upon the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra, she entered into the earth where Sita Devi was born from the earth. Purport. It was impossible for Sita Devi to live in separation from Lord Ramachandra. Therefore, after entrusting her two sons to the care of Valmiki Muni, she entered into the earth. After hearing the news of Mother Sita's entering the earth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra, was certainly aggrieved. Although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, upon remembering the exalted qualities of Mother Sita, he could not check his grief in transcendental love. Prabhupada's purport. I'll read the next verse and then two purports. The attraction between man and woman, or male and female, always exists everywhere, making everyone always fearful. Such feelings are present even amongst the controllers like Brahma and Lord Shiva. and is the cause of fear for them. What to speak of others who attach to household life in this material world? Prabhupada's purports to 16 and 17. Short purports. Lord Ramachandra's grief at the news of Sita Devi's entering the earth is not to be considered material. In the spiritual world also, there are feelings of separation, but such feelings are considered spiritual bliss, because Krishna, when someone has spiritual feelings of separation, missing that person, Krishna or Krishna's great devotees, those great devotees or Krishna actually appear by that process of separation. And actually that process is the process of God-realization. The process of feeling separation from Krishna is the process of self-realization taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is actually the process. This is explained by Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book. So Lord Ramachandra's attraction and missing Sita Devi was not on the material platform. It was on the spiritual platform. And on the spiritual platform, such emotions are different varieties of bliss. Such feelings are a sign of tasya prema vatsyatva swabhava, being under the influence of ladini shakti, or Krishna's internal energy, and being controlled by love. In the material world, such feelings of separation are only a perverted reflection. So the next verse will talk about the perverted reflection. As explained above, about the attraction between men and women in the material world, when the feelings of love and transcendental bliss from the spiritual world are pervertedly reflected in this material world, they are certainly the cause of bondage. They don't cause bliss, but they cause bondage. Bondage, trapped by the modes of material nature, trapped, causing birth and death. As long as men feel attracted to women in this material world and women feel attracted to men, the bondage of repeated birth and death will continue. But in the spiritual world, where there is no fear of birth and death, such feelings of separation are the cause of transcendental bliss. They are not at all the spiritual world based on false ego. They are based on the soul's actual identity. And therefore, Radha Krishna Pranayava Kriti Ladini Shakti Asmad. The transcendental pastimes and dealings between Radha and Krishna, they're all interactions of the internal potency, Ladini Shakti, the potency of bliss. In the absolute reality, there are varieties of feeling, but all of them are of the same quality of transcendental bliss. So after Mother Sita entered the earth, Lord Ramachandra observed complete celibacy and performed an uninterrupted Agnihotra, fire sacrifice, jagya, for 13,000 years. After completing the sacrifice, Lord Ramachandra, whose lotus feet were sometimes pierced by thorns when he lived in Dandakaranya, placed those lotus feet in the hearts of those who always think of him. Where did he place his lotus feet? Yes. Because the devotees always think of him. Why do the devotees always think of Lord Ramachandra, the devotees of Lord Ramachandra? Yes, they love him. They are devotees, that means they are devoted to him. He is the object of their devotion. They are devotees and he is the object of the devotion. So naturally the devotee always thinks of his beloved, the Lord. Then he entered his own abode after placing his lotus feet in the hearts of those who always think of him. Then he entered his own abode, the Vaikuntha planet, beyond the Brahma Jyoti. The lotus feet, here's Prabhupada's purport, of the Lord are always a subject matter for meditation for devotees. Sometimes when Lord Ramachandra wandered in the forest of Dandakaranya, thorns would prick his lotus feet. The devotees of thinking of this would faint. They couldn't tolerate, this is the nature of true love, they couldn't tolerate the thought of him experiencing any pain. The Lord does not feel pain or pleasure from any action or reaction of this material world. But the devotees cannot tolerate even the pricking of the Lord's lotus feet by a thorn. This was the attitude of the gopis when they thought of Krishna wandering in the forest with pebbles and grains of sand pricking his lotus feet. This tribulation in the heart of a devotee cannot be understood by karmis, jnanis, or yogis. The devotees who could not tolerate even thinking of the Lord's lotus feet being pricked by a thorn were again put into tribulation by thinking of the Lord's disappearance. For the Lord had to return to his abode after finishing his pastimes in this material world. Text 20. Lord Ramachandra's reputation for having killed Ravan with showers of arrows at the request of the demigods and for having built a bridge over the ocean does not constitute the factual glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra, whose spiritual body is always engaged in various pastimes. Lord Ramachandra has no equal or superior, and therefore he had no need to take help from the monkeys to gain victory over Ravan. As stated in the Vedas, the Svetasvatara Upanishad, Natasikayam karanam javidyate natat samaschabhyadikas jadasyate parasya shakti vividaya shuryate svabhavika jnana balakriyacha. The Supreme Lord has nothing to do, and no one is found to be equal or greater than him. For everything is done naturally and systematically by his multifarious energies. The Lord has nothing to do, natasikaryam karanam chavidyate. Whatever he does is his pastime. The Lord has no duty to perform to oblige anyone. Nonetheless, he appears to act to protect his devotees or kill his enemies. Of course, no one can be the Lord's enemy, since who could be more powerful than the Lord? There is actually no question of anyone's being his enemy. When the Lord wants to take pleasure in pastimes, he comes down to this material world and acts like a human being, thus showing his wonderful, glorious activities to please the devotees. His devotees always want to see the Lord victorious in varied activities, and therefore to please himself and them, the Lord sometimes agrees to act as a human being and perform wonderful, uncommon pastimes for the satisfaction of the devotees. So again, hearing about Lord Ramachandra naturally brings up the topic of Krishna, because Lord Ramachandra had such wonderful pastimes and very similar in some senses to the pastimes of Lord Krishna. And before one can understand or accept the pastimes of Lord Krishna, these pastimes of Lord Ramachandra are being explained. Again, because his pastimes are ideal, the ideal behavior of a human being. There was some criticism immediately. Sita was banished. Immediately he adjusted himself. He adjusted himself immediately so he could perform his duty according to the moral principles. But when Krishna comes, he doesn't adjust anything. With Lord Ramachandra, it is as if he is being controlled by the morality that controls ordinary men. But when it comes to Krishna, he shows that he is not at all under the laws of morality. He is above those laws. He is above every law. He is the full manifestation of the maker of the laws, the controller, the supreme controller, the supreme personality of Godhead. Everything he does is under the influence or under the potency, the internal spiritual potency. When Lord Ramachandra agrees to act according to the morality, the highest morality in this material world, he is not under that morality. He is always under the Ladini Shakti, the internal energy. Antaranga Shakti. Everything is under that. But it appears as if he is acting according to the morality of this world. But when Krishna appears, he acts transcendental, always transcendental. His pastimes are called Naralila. They resemble those of an ordinary man, but he does everything in an incredible way. Not bound, not limited. He just does everything by his internal energy. So the principles that are needed to be understood just prior to understanding Lord Krishna's pastimes are being explained here by the pastimes of Lord Ram. His devotees always want to see the Lord victorious in varied activities, and therefore to please himself and them, the Lord sometimes agrees to act as a human being and perform wonderful, uncommon pastimes for the satisfaction of the devotees. So everything in Krishna's lila and Lord Ram's lila is actually understood to be performed not under the ahankara vimudatma kattahamiti manyate, not under the maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharan, Krishna says, not under the potency of the modes of material nature, but everything is being performed under the internal energy, Krishna's the spiritual energy, all for the pleasure of the Lord and his devotees. 21. Lord Ramachandra's spotless fame, name and fame, which vanquish all sinful reactions, are celebrated in all directions. Like the ornamental cloth of the victorious elephant that conquers all directions. Great saintly persons like Markandeya Rishi still glorify his characteristics in the assembly of great emperors like Maharaj Yudhisthira. Similarly, all the saintly kings and all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, worship the Lord by bowing down with their helmets. Let me offer my obeisances unto his lotus feet. Lord Ramachandra returned to his abode to which bhakti yogis are promoted. This is the place to which all the inhabitants of Ayodhya went after they served the Lord in his manifest pastimes by offering him obeisances, touching his lotus feet, fully observing him as a father-like king, sitting or lying down with him like equals, or even just accompanying him. So why did they go to the spiritual world after Lord Ramachandra went? Is because they were missing him. He left and then they were missing him and thinking about him continuously. They were all his devotees. He had placed his lotus feet in their hearts in the mood of separation. Because once having met a person like Lord Ramachandra, and once having served him or dealt with him or seen him as the father-like king, offered him obeisances, touching his lotus feet, the Lord so much captivated their hearts and minds that not for a moment could they stop thinking about him. And when he left this world, after having seen him every day, first he grew up in the kingdom. And then he had to go to the forest. And they were just missing him. And then he came back and ruled. And then he left. And their hearts were so captivated by Lord Ramachandra that they thought about him in separation continuously. And in this way he had placed his lotus feet in their hearts. He was always present with them in those feelings of separation. And thus naturally, when they left this world, they were thinking about Lord Ramachandra and they went to his divine abode. Saratad Bhava Bharata. This is the principle. Always think of Krishna this way. Prabhupada's purport. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4:9, Janma kama cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvata chakfadayam puna janma naitimameti so arjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Here this is confirmed. All the inhabitants of Ayodhya who saw Lord Ramachandra as citizens, served him as servants, sat and talked with him as friends, or were somehow or another present during his reign, they all went back home, back to Godhead, after giving up the body. The devotee who becomes perfect in devotional service enters that particular universe where Lord Ramachandra or Lord Krishna is engaged in his pastimes. And then after being trained to serve the Lord in various capacities in that prakat lila or manifest lila in the material world, the devotee is finally promoted to Sanatana Dham, the supreme abode in the spiritual world. This Sanatana Dhamma is also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Parastasmat tu bhavo anyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana. One who enters the transcendental pastimes of the Lord is called Nitya Lila Pravishta. To understand clearly why Lord Ramachandra returned, it is mentioned herewith that the Lord went to that particular place where the bhakti yogis go. The impersonalists misunderstand the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam to mean that the Lord entered his own effulgence and therefore became impersonal. But the Lord is person, and his devotees are person. Indeed, the living entities like the Lord were all persons in the past. They are persons in the present. They will continue to be persons even after giving up the body. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Natvevaham jatuna sam natam neme janadipa. Krishna says that all these kings, he tells Arjuna, that you see present before you, they were all existed in the past, they exist now, and they will exist in the future. Never was a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, we're all existing now, there was no time we didn't exist, they will exist in the future. It's not that they were impersonal before, then that they became personal, and then they will become impersonal again. Or Krishna was impersonal, and then now he's acting as a person, and then he'll also go back to the Brahma Jyoti and merge and lose his personality. No, no, no. Always a person. We, Krishna, all living entities. So the Mayavada impersonal philosophy is not according to Shastra, actually. Text 23. O King Prickett, anyone who orally, A-U-R-A-L-L-Y, what is that? What does that mean? Through the ears. Anyone who orally receives the narrations concerning the characteristic of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes will ultimately be freed from the disease of envy and thus be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. Envy is the disease that keeps us in the material world. Jealousy of Krishna. Purport. And then, therefore, of everyone else too. Prabhupada's purport. Here in the material world, this material world, everyone is envious of someone else. Even in religious life, it is sometimes found that if one devotee has advanced in spiritual activities, other devotees are envious of him. Such envious devotees are not completely freed from the bondage of birth and death. As long as one is not completely free from the cause of birth and death, one cannot enter into the Sanatana Dhamma, or the eternal pastimes of the Lord. One becomes envious because of being influenced by the designations of the body. But the liberated devotee has nothing to do with the body, and therefore he is completely on the transcendental platform. A devotee is never envious of anyone, even his enemy, because the devotee knows that the Lord is his supreme protector. He thinks, what harm can the so-called enemy do? Thus a devotee is confident about his protection. And this is actually the main quality of surrender, of becoming a devotee, is that placing oneself under the protection and guardianship of Krishna and feeling confidence in that. And that is the process of actually becoming peaceful in this world. Otherwise, it's not possible. What harm can my enemy do? So-called enemy. No one can harm me unless Krishna sanctions it. So if Krishna wants something to happen, okay. The Lord says, Prabhupada continues, Yeye tam mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham. There's one little pastime in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam when the great demon Agasura, he had opened his mouth. He was a great powerful demon, mystic, and he turned into a serpent, huge serpent, and he opened his mouth hoping to swallow the cowherd boys and Krishna and kill them. So when the cowherd boys saw that Krishna had opened his mouth, the demon had opened his mouth, and it looked like a big cave, and like boys naturally want to go play in the caves and have a good time. So they all began walking into that cave, and then one said, wait a second, that's not a cave, it's a serpent. Look at that. Those are his teeth. They're not rocks. And the wind blowing out of the cave isn't actually a wind. That's his breathing. And that road isn't actually a road. It's his tongue. So how can we walk in this great demon's mouth? And the coward boy said, anyway, Krishna will protect us. What do we have to worry about? Let's go. And they walked in, carefree, no anxiety. So this is how a devotee, an actual devotee, a surrendered devotee, Gotripdevaranamtata, he lives in the material world in a fearless way. Narayana Praksave Nakutastana Bibhyati Swaga Pavarga. Where Narakeshu Apitoyatitash, he doesn't care where he is, heaven, hell, because wherever he is, he feels safe and under Krishna's protection. This is wonderful consciousness. Ye tamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. According to the proportion of one's surrender unto me, I respond accordingly, Krishna says. A devotee must therefore be completely free from envy, especially of other devotees. To envy other devotees is a great offense, a Vaishnava parad. A devotee who constantly engages in hearing and chanting, Shravana Kirtanam, is certainly freed from the disease of envy, and thus he becomes eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. Maharaj Cricket then inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, how did the Lord conduct himself? How did he behave in relationship with his brothers, who were expansions of his own self? And how did his brothers and the inhabitants of Ayodhya treat him? Sukadev Goswami replied, after accepting the throne of the government by the fervent request of his younger brother Bharat, Lord Ramachandra ordered his younger brothers to go out and conquer the entire world, while he personally remained in the capital to give audience to all the citizens and residents of the palace and supervise the governmental affairs with his other assistants. This is an interesting purport by Srila Prabhupada. So Ramachandra, what did he do? He was made king. Bharat insisted he become king, became king. He was the elder brother. He became king. Then he sent the rest of the brothers out to conquer the world. He himself remained. Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not allow any of his devotees or assistants to be engaged in sense gratification. The younger brothers of Lord Ramachandra were at home enjoying the personal presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the Lord ordered them to go out and achieve victory all over the world. It was the custom, and this custom in some places is still current, that all other kings would have to accept the supremacy of the emperor. If the king of a small state did not accept the emperor's supremacy, there would be a fight, and the king of the small state would be obliged to accept the emperor as supreme. Otherwise, it would not be possible for the emperor to rule the country. Lord Ramachandra showed his favor to his brothers by ordering them to go out. Many of the Lord's devotees residing in Vrindavan have taken the vow not to leave Vrindavan to preach Krishna consciousness. But the Lord says that Krishna consciousness should be spread all over the world, in every village, in every town. This is the open order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prithivityachyat nagaradigram savatra prachar haive moranam. A pure devotee, therefore, must execute the order of the Lord and must not gratify his senses by remaining stagnant in one place, falsely proud, thinking that because he does not leave Vrindavan but chants in a solitary place, he has become a great devotee. A devotee must carry out the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Yari Deka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh. Every devotee, therefore, should spread Krishna consciousness by preaching, asking whomever he meets to accept the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord says, Savadamam Prityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. This is the order of the Lord, who speaks as the Supreme Emperor. Everyone should be induced to accept this order, for this is victory, digvijay. And it is the duty of the soldier, the devotee, to impress upon everyone this philosophy of life. Of course, those who are Kanista Adhikaris do not preach, but the Lord shows mercy to them also, as he did by staying personally in Ayodhya to give audience to the people in general. One should not mistakenly think that the Lord asked his younger brothers to leave Ayodhya because he especially favored the citizens. The Lord is merciful to everyone, and he knows how to show his favor to each individual person according to his capacity. One who abides by the order of the Lord is a pure devotee. Text 26, describing the reign of Ramachandra, and there's a hint of the opulences of the kingdom. During the reign of Lord Ramachandra, the streets of the capital, Ayodhya, were sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor thrown about by elephants from their trunks. So the elephants would I don't know what it's called when an elephant sucks up water with his trunk, and there would be perfumed water that he would suck up and then spray it. The elephants have the ability, so they were trained to spray the perfumed water on the streets. And the result was that the streets became, after they were clean, they became extremely fragrant. So that gives a hint, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, about the opulence of the kingdom of Ayodhya under Lord Ramachandra. Because first of all, to have elephants, so many elephants, it's one has to be so wealthy to maintain elephants. And then to have them as their duty be spraying fragrant water all over is very wonderful, and that creates a pleasing and an auspicious atmosphere. So when the citizens saw the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the city in such opulence, they appreciated this opulence very much. Purport. We have simply heard about the opulence of Ramrajya during the reign of Lord Ramachandra. Now here is one example of the opulence of the Lord's kingdom. The streets of Ayodhya were not only cleaned, but also sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor, which were distributed by elephants to their trunks. There was no need of sprinkling machines, for the elephant has a natural ability to suck water through its trunk and again throw it out in a shower. We can understand the opulence of the city from this one example. It was actually sprinkled with perfumed water. Moreover, the citizens had the opportunity to see the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the state. He was not a sleeping monarch, as we can understand from his activities in sending his brothers to sea to affairs outside the capital and punish anyone who did not obey the emperor's orders. This is called digvijay, the conquering in all directions. The citizens were all given facilities for peaceful life, and they were also qualified with appropriate attributes according to Vanashrama. As we have seen from the previous chapter, Vanashrama Gunanvita, the citizens were trained according to the Vanashrama system. A class of men were Brahmanas, a class of men were Kshatriyas, a class were Vaishyas, and a class were Sudras. Without this scientific division, there can be no question of good citizenship. The king, being magnanimous and perfect in his duty, performed many sacrifices and treated the citizens as his son. So this is a summary, almost, of the Vanashrama activities of the king. And the citizens being trained in the Vanashrama system were obedient and perfectly ordered. The entire monarchy was so opulent and peaceful that the government was even able to sprinkle the streets with perfumed water. What to speak of other management? Since the city was sprinkled with perfumed water, we can simply imagine how opulent it was in other respects. Why should the citizens not have felt happy during the reign of Lord Ramachandra? Continuing describing the city. The palaces, the palace gates, the assembly houses, the platforms for meeting places, the temples, and all such places were decorated with golden water pots and bedecked with various types of flags. Wherever Lord Ramachandra visited, auspicious welcome gates were constructed with banana trees and betel nut trees full of flowers and fruits. The gates were decorated with various flags made of colorful cloth and with tapestries, mirrors, and garlands. Wherever Lord Ramachandra visited, the people approached him with paraphernalia of worship and begged the Lord's blessings. O Lord, they said, as you rescued the earth from the bottom of the sea in your incarnation as a boar, now you may maintain it. Thus we beg your blessings. Thereafter, not having seen the Lord for a long time, the citizens, both men and women, being very eager to see him, left their homes and got up on the roofs of the palaces. Being completely satiated with seeing the face of the lotus-eyed Lord Ramachandra, they showered flowers upon him. They loved him. It's so natural for the citizens to want a king who is so worthy of respect and is so qualified by integrity and strength and heroism, religiousness, courage, Ishwara Bhavam. Naturally, like, because then the citizens feel protected, just like when the father is strong, the children feel protected in his company. So they loved him. And when they couldn't see him for a while, he would walk through the streets and they would go to the roofs and throw flower petals upon him. Thereafter, Lord Ramachandra entered the palace of his forefathers. Within the palace were various treasures and valuable wardrobes. The sitting places on two sides of the entrance door were made of coral. The yards were surrounded by pillars of Vaidurja money. The floors were made of highly polished Marakatta money. And the fountain, I think these are emeralds, maybe. So very valuable jewels. And the foundation was made of marble. The entire palace was decorated with flags and garlands and bedecked with valuable stones, shining with a celestial effulgence. The palace was fully decorated with pearls and surrounded by lamps and incense. The men and women within the palace all resembled demigods and were decorated with various ornaments, which seemed beautiful because of being placed on their bodies. Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, chief of the best learned scholars, resided in that palace with his pleasure potency, Mother Sita, and enjoyed complete peace. Without transgressing the religious principles, Lord Ramachandra, whose lotus feet are worshipped by devotees in meditation, enjoyed with all the paraphernalia of transcendental pleasure for as long as needed. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 11th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Ramachandra Rules the World. Lord Ramachandra ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivedanta ki jai. Any questions or comments? So this, those two chapters were all the pastimes or activities of Lord Ram, and then the descendants of Lord Ram, coming from Lord Ram. This is all coming through the dynasty of the Sun and Ichaku. Continuing. And gradually, as the 9th canto goes on, it comes to the, just prior to the advent of questions or comments? Yes.
What if can be simply just by chanting, or is it possible by knowledge?
If one chants Hare Krishna and engages in bhakti yoga, the false ego is completely dissolved. And the false ego is the most subtle form of material life. As soon as the souls are injected into the pradhan, or the primary ingredient of material existence, the result of that, they're injected along with their karma and time by, through the glance of the Lord. And then immediately, the Mahatattva appears. Everything starts manifesting. And immediately there is false ego. And the false ego combines with goodness, passion, and ignorance, and thus the material world is created. False ego is the consciousness, the false consciousness of the living entity. When the living entity, Krishna Bhule Se Jeev, Anadi Bahimak, turning their back on Krishna, their consciousness is reflected into the material world where they can imagine, we can imagine, we are lords. So by bhakti, the false ego is removed in that we're becoming established again in our relationship with Krishna, turning towards Krishna again. So again, livera surupoi Krishna nityadas, again becoming Krishna's servant. So so bhakti removes the false ego, which is basically based on envy of Krishna. And because we're envious of Krishna, we don't want to be his servant, then we become envious of so many others in the material world who have anything that we think that we would like or is valuable. So gyan is very insidious. Not gyan is insidious really, but the idea of merging with Krishna is considered the last snare of Maya. It's the last snare of the false ego, in the sense that one comes to the point of giving up everything in the material world, but can't again become Krishna's servant, can't again establish himself in Krishna's service. Even though he's spiritually established, having no tinges of the material world, he still refuses to become a servant of God. So it is a snare of Maya, the last trap of Maya. So the thought of one becoming God means, in one sense, the biggest false ego. Instead of admitting, I'm not God, if I could be a servant of Krishna. So in that sense, Mayavadis are considered to have the biggest false ego. False sense of identity, identifying with God instead of identifying with God's servant. So that's also based, say, is envy. And to show that, when Krishna kills a demon, when Krishna himself kills a demon, they merge into his effulgence, or his body. And this is the same result that's given to the Mayava, or the impersonalists, merging with their body. So if it's the same thing given to the demons, who are envious of Krishna, so there's an indication just in that, that it's an envious position. And basically, through jnana yoga, one develops a disinterest in the material world and an identification with the Supreme, understanding that he's a soul and he identifies with the Supreme Soul, and then attempts to merge and become the Supreme Soul. But if a jnana yogi, an impersonalist, renounced from the material world, Muhunam janamanante gyanamamam prapadyante vasudeva savamiti samahamadu salulava. So after many, many births, if his knowledge becomes complete and perfect, then he actually surrenders to the Lord and becomes a devotee. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
Can envy in the spiritual?
No.
We have like,
there's the real ego. There's competition, but no envy. Envy means what? It means that you hate the person, you're jealous of them, you wish them harm. So in the spiritual world, there's desire to please Krishna more. Everything is based on that, but there's no wishing to push another down like that. There's competition, though, in the spiritual world. There's parties, groups, and they compete to serve Krishna, but there is no envy, no actual envy as there is envy in the material world. It's hard for us in the material world to understand the consciousness of those in the spiritual world. Not hard, impossible. So we accept those things. Yes.
Because we're coming towards the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Oh, there's so much more in the Bhagavatam.
The classes, dinner, and I make some cake to distribute.
Oh, how nice.
An appreciation for the class that you're giving.
it seems. Is that turned off?